Welcome to Mid-Century Modernism with Monique, your go-to podcast for all things architecture, design, and innovation within mid-century modernism. Join me on a journey through the golden age of design, where every episode brings you fresh inspiration for modern living and unlocks the secrets of this iconic and timeless style. What are we waiting for? Let's get started. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mid-Century Modernism with Monique. I'm Monique Anton, your host, and I am so thrilled to finally be talking with Julian Goldklang. He is here on the show today, and I am so happy that you are here to share with us what you do.
Yes, great to be here. I've been listening to the podcast since you launched it, and it's just really cool to hear the voices of everyone behind who's keeping mid-century alive these days.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So Julian is the founder and owner of Mid-Century Mobler. I know we've all seen the emails, we've all looked at the websites, and he has amazing Danish and vintage modern pieces that you cannot find anywhere else. So I wanted to just to get started and ask you how you first came upon all of these pieces and what led you to your amazing store?
Yes, thank you. So it's kind of a long story, so I'll try to keep it short. but what really got me into furniture and design from this era were cars. So when I was in high school, when I was 15 years old, I had the option of driving my mom's Ford Windstar, like 95 Ford Windstar.
Nice.
Or buying my own car. My parents were like, you can drive the van or you can find something to drive. So I found there's a barbershop in Petaluma that would sell old cars. They would just park, you know, in front of the barbershop and put a for sale sign on them. And I was up there because my friends lived up there, and there was a 58 Pontiac for sale for $1,500. And
it's a steal.
Yeah, it was a steal. it was definitely a bucket. I ended up buying it towing it to auto shop. I was taking they had an auto shop at my high school. So I ended up fixing this thing up for like 2 years, and it was a really kind of it needed a lot of work. It was very rusty.
Yeah.
But I just fell in love with the design of that era. And, you know, in 1958, GM, it was the 50th anniversary of GM. So they just went all out with every single car in their line. And they, you know, for Pontiac and for Oldsmobile and Buick, they basically just chrome plated everything. Wow. So the car had like little stars imprinted in the headliner, and the dash looked like a spaceship. And I was just completely enamored with this car. And so I drove it around and I met other car guys, and we would meet up at like Eric's in Santa Fe and go, you have the drive in and cruise down 4th Street every Friday night.
That was so fun.
And it just stuck with me. So when I went to college, I was like, I'm just going to buy vintage furniture. And I got another old car in, you know, during the summertime. And anyway, I just always had this bug. So yes.
You were feeling it and it became a part of your lifestyle and what you wanted to surround yourself with.
Yeah, exactly. And so when I graduated college, I was like working in television. That was my career that I decided to do. Not making, you know, making $10 an hour the time. And so what I would do is go to estate sales and buy and sell stuff on eBay, you know, like an old Cadillac headlamp from a 1915 Cadillac, or just things I would find at estate sales that were kind of 50s and things that that disappealed to me. And I would make some extra money doing that. And so I just continued doing that. That was about 2004 or 5. And I'd continue doing that for another 5 years on the side. And then what happened was in 2010, I was working at Current TV and I got laid off, and I'm like, well, what am I going to do now? Am I going to try to find another career in television, or should I just go like bull hog on this and try to make a living off of selling furniture?
Yeah, right on.
So that's what I did. And at that time, we were selling pieces out of a one-car garage in San Francisco.
So inspiring.
Yeah. So it was.
That.
It was definitely a time of adventure. It was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
So cars, then furniture, and then your home now is a mid-century modern home.
Yes.
Tell me about this, because I've heard that it's round and it's sort of that Googie style, and
I
am obsessed.
Oh yeah. So of course I've been obsessed with John Lautner and the Chemosphere forever. And we came across this house kind of by accident. So we were moving our shop at the time in 2015 from the city to Berkeley because our lease had just ended. We're looking for a bigger space. We successfully moved the shop, and then we were like, well, what are we going to do? Commute over the Bay Bridge, back and forth. And we started looking at houses, and our criteria was it has to be almost 100% original, but not falling apart original.
Right, right.
But also not redone or redone too much so we could, you know, keep it in its original state. And it was difficult.
Very difficult.
Yeah, as you probably know.
Yes, the majority of these homes have been altered so much or they're in distress.
Yeah.
So you can't, what is there to do?
Yeah. And as if they pass through too many hands, then you're just going to get a mishmash of styles.
Right.
So we, you know, this house came to market. It was a third owner selling it. And it kind of got some press, and I got wind of it, and everybody was like going to the East Bay for the open house to tour this house. Because it's not often that you see a round home from the late 60s pop
That's
up.
Right. That's right.
And so the crazy thing about this home is it has a butterfly roof. And the designer or the architect, Leon Meyer, he only built two of those. Yes. One was his own house that he built in 66, which is still in Montclair if you guys want to go visit it. and the other one was our house, which was built in 67. And apparently the roof was too difficult to manufacture. So every house after that was built had a flat roof, which
you'll see
if you ever come across the other Leon Meyers, they're all flat roofs.
Yeah. Which is easier for them. They were trying to optimize at that time.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, these were essentially prefab homes that were built in warehouses in Oakland and then brought to kind of funky sites where not a lot of people wanted to build on. And then they would just easily put the house together within about a week or so. And it made for a kind of a cheaper way to build a unique home.
Right.
Yeah.
And for those of you listening, we are listening to the footsteps of Julian's adorable dog, who is here with us right now.
Yes, that's Teddy. He's our 9.5-year-old Boston.
Very, very cute.
He's definitely a part of Mid-Century Mobler as well.
Yes, and Walter would be very jealous. But
boo-boo.
We were talking about, you know, buying these homes and the dilemma that you have with making them all original to restore them or, you know, doing the updated new look. And I was telling Julian, I think that it's so much more a better experience when you keep the integrity of the architecture, where you bring it back to its original intent.
Yeah.
I think for those of us that love these homes, you can feel the difference immediately.
Oh.
And that experience is what a lot of us are looking for. If you change them or alter them or make them more traditional in any way, it really takes the spirit out of the house.
Yeah,
it
does.
It really does.
Yeah. And so part of actually what Monique and I were discussing when I first came into her amazing mid-century home here is that it is really difficult to find the right materials that are kind of period specific that aren't going to make your house look too modern, like modern today, but outdated in 5 years. And so finding those materials can be kind of difficult. I mean, and you know, you're in this industry. I'm very much in this industry as well. And we're immersed in it. And even then, with all of our resources, it's still tough to find it's the right materials to bring our homes back to their original state that's going to make them classic forever.
Right. And even if we do find it, finding enough of them, mm-hmm. If you happen to find the right fixture, well, you need three of them. And yes. There's only one.
Yeah.
You have a great resource right across from your store I would love to share that with listeners.
Absolutely.
Well.
So we're very lucky to just kind of have landed where we are at our new location in Berkeley, 1065 Ashby Avenue.
and at midcenturymobler.com.
Yes. And across the street from us is a place called Urban Ore. They've been a staple in Berkeley for many, many years. And I would say it's probably maybe 30,000 square feet. And it's a salvage company. So all the old doors that people don't really want to throw away, but know have value, but also don't know what to do with them, a lot of that stuff ends up getting donated to Urban Ore. And so if you're looking for, an original sink for your Eichler or original teal toilet, yes. For your, 1950s redo bathroom, you're probably going to find it there. And and it's a place where you can actually go back every couple weeks and they're always going to have something new. So it is a treasure trove. You do have to dig, it's like going to any flea market, but it is a fantastic resource for anyone in the Bay who has a original home that they want to redo.
I think part of the fun is the search, though. Part of the fun is the hunt for these pieces. Yeah. And you can put your own creative spin on it, too, mm-hmm. if you're into a certain color or you have, different objects that are, attractive to you. That's so exciting to do. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Where do you source most of your pieces for Mid-Century Mobler?
So about 98% of everything that we find is from Denmark or Sweden or France or Germany. It all comes from Europe, essentially, or Scandinavia. And a lot of people ask us why, why don't you just go to an do estate sales? And I have to tell them, we have 10,000 square feet of furniture, floor to ceiling, wall to wall. It is completely packed. And to find that much inventory in the United States, you would spend, decades every single weekend trying to estate sale that quality of material. So, so the way we work is we rely on, I have a team of people that we've met over the last 11 years, all over Scandinavia and in the UK. And so these guys are kind of pickers. They just go out and find stuff all the time. They're obsessive, very OCD about it. And
As we all are.
Yeah, exactly. But, it's their lifestyle. And if they find something amazing, they know that I'm the guy to get in touch with. So what we do is, those pieces get procured, then delivered to our warehouse, either in Copenhagen or in just outside of London. And then when we have, 300 pieces, 400 pieces of furniture in the warehouse, everything gets broken down, packed in a 40-foot container, and then shipped to Berkeley, where it all gets unloaded and reassembled and reorganized.
Amazing.
And then refinished and upholstered eventually.
And you have another upholstery. You have someone that you wanted to recommend as well?
Do I?
You were talking about having... Well, you'll have to contact Julian yourself to get his references and referrals. But but I love how you can walk into the store and you have a designer also there who will kind of put pieces together. Yeah. If I needed an entire house full of furniture... Mm-hmm. And I wanted to put, rooms together with a designer. They are there in your store to help, which I think is amazing.
Absolutely. And, the beautiful thing about vintage furniture is that, and I tell a lot of our clients this, it's lasted 50, 60, 70 years. It's in near perfect condition for its age. It needs a little bit of renovation, a little cleanup, refinishing, upholstery. But it's going to last you another forever. 50, 60, 70, 80 years.
Right.
And so you can really get a lot of lifetime, a lot of value out of vintage pieces. And plus, they make your house look a lot cooler.
Yeah, and they feel really good.
Yes.
What is your favorite, most unique piece that you've ever found?
Oh, that's a great question.
I'm sure there are a lot.
There are so many.
Maybe one or two.
There are so many pieces. I have a couple favorites. So what we normally do is like the wackiest, craziest stuff we find ends up going in our own personal collection. Mm-hmm. And so our house is sort of a curated museum in a way of amazing furniture. That we've kind of cherry picked over the years.
And what are, dare I ask, what designers you have?
One of the pieces I really love is it's called a parrot chair. It's by Ib Arberg, and it was made in Sweden, and it's literally like a giant chrome hanging basket that has a black stamped steel stand, and you get inside of this cage and you just kind of hang out inside of it like a parrot. Yeah.
Love that.
And it's just one of the most comfortable and weirdly, it's not really space age, it's not really mid-century, but it is at the same time.
Yes.
It's just such a cool piece. And then, you know, there's other items like, which are a little bit more common. Mm-hmm. We have a Pearsall sofa that I've just had for, I think, 10 years. And I know Pearsall is, you know, for craft associates, a little bit more common here in the States, but this piece is 100% original. So it has the original floral back cushions and it's in the original red wool. And it looks like it was made a year ago. Wow. And I am just blown away when I come across pieces like that. Because I'm like, how on earth was this thing kept in this condition for the last 60 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, great ownership. Ownership. And sometimes we'll have sales where the heirs of a mid-century modern home, they will say, oh, what are these junky chairs?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell them, you know, actually, you could probably get maybe $5,000 or $6,000 for each of these because they're so rare and beautiful. But
yeah,
so interesting. So we all know about Eames. We know about Le Corbusier. Mm-hmm. You know, there are these pieces that are very popular. But what are your favorite must-haves or designers that you love that you would share?
Yes. So I was going to mention this is another piece or a set that we have at home. But the Model 42 chair by Kai Christensen has to be one of the most comfortable dining chairs that was made during this era. And when people come in the store, you know, if they go, oh, I have an X budget, you know, I don't point them to that. Because if we have them in stock, as soon as you sit in this chair, there's nothing else that's going to feel or look or give you the same perspective as the Model 42. So it's a swivel back. It's some people call it the Z chair. They made them in rosewood and teak and oak. But we've had our set for the last 10 years. We have a set of 8 and have had every opportunity to change them out with something more unique looking or maybe potentially more comfortable, and nothing compares to this chair. So if you're hunting for dining chairs and you have the budget, just look for Model 42s.
Wow.
You're going to love them. They have a little armrest on them. They're everybody's favorite dining chair from this era. And what's kind of cool too is Kai Christensen is still alive and he's like 93 or 94 now. He's still active in the design community. So he's re-releasing with some companies some of his original designs from the era. Unfortunately, not the Model 42, which makes them more valuable. But yeah, there are so many designers from this era that nobody knows about, because unless it's being reproduced or carried at Design Within Reach, or you can buy it from Herman Miller, they have a great advertising budget. But if you dig a little deeper, you know, you'll come across designers like Kurt Ostervig and Arne Wall Iverson. And that's just in Denmark. Then you can jump over to Sweden or jump over to England or Scotland or Brazil. And it's kind of a never-ending exploration of just incredible design from that era. And each country has their own take on it as well.
Wow. Yeah. And you've talked with people. I'm amazed that you talked with Lisa Eames maybe on the phone, or you talked with Kirsten Moeller. Mm-hmm. What was that like? What is?
Yeah, it is a bit surreal because we've been really immersed in these designs for, you know, almost 15 years now, and you almost create a narrative around the designer. And then you end up meeting, like, for instance, Gunny Omanyun, they did the Model 18 Credenza. It was released, I think, in 1957 or 8. And they're kind of a rare design. And about 2016, his grandson decided to start the company up again. So he found a manufacturer in Denmark. He's a Dane as well. His name is Ulrich Oman. And he started remaking the Model 18 and also the Model 100 coffee table, which you would only have found if you dug really deep in Denmark. And so it's, you know, just being able to ask the grandson of Gunny Oman questions about these pieces, like what was the inspiration behind the, you know, the base form that you don't see on any other piece from this era, is pretty incredible. And a lot of these people have original documentation as well. So being able to connect with someone living who was related or who knows, still knows a lot about these designs is it's a privilege. And it's pretty cool that these guys are keeping these designs alive.
How amazing. Yeah. And the respect that we all have for someone who would keep it going and keep those designs alive is pretty amazing.
Absolutely.
You have this front row seat to all of this that, yeah, I find very exciting. What is on the horizon for Mid-Century Mobler? Do you have any other expansion plans?
I do. I mean, I'm, as any entrepreneur typically does, I tend to get kind of, and I'm sure you do too, Monique, mm-hmm, get kind of, you're in your own bubble. So it's sometimes it's hard to think outside of that, and your day-to-day kind of takes up a lot of,
yes,
your mental energy. But yeah, we've been working on a marketplace where, because we get a lot of people get in touch with us and they want to sell furniture, but we don't have the space to take it on or the time to market it. So we're creating a marketplace where collectors and, you know, maybe people who inherited vintage pieces can list their items and sell them to other people that are interested in buying vintage. Wow. So that's in the works currently. You know, real estate down the line, of course. We want to
maybe staging.
Holy. I would definitely love to do some staging. We've done a little bit of that in the past. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And a lot of moving and a lot of costs.
It really is. But absolutely. But being able to mm-hmm present some of these original pieces in their proper setting is what I love to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, eventually we'll get our racket club home down in Palm Springs, and
yes,
maybe a Mid-Century in Tahoe or something that we can rent out partially.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing that you're offering that for people. There are so many families that don't know what to do with these pieces. Mm-hmm. So if you are someone who owns a lot of this furniture, we have so many people write into Modern Homes about what to do with them. So if they go to your website, mm-hmm, and they, you know, share photos of what they have, how are you helping them price these things? Or do you send examples, or... Mm-hmm. Is that really up to them?
So at the moment, and this is kind of the reason why we're creating this marketplace, I have to turn a lot of people away, mm-hmm, because what we're dealing with right now with Mid-Century Mobler is mostly like high-end Danish. If it's high-end American or Brazilian, we'll take it on. But if it's not, like, let's say it's like a Lena Klein coffee table. Love Lena Klein coffee tables. They're really cool. I was really into them when it got started, but I feel like we've moved past that in our own business. So I hate to say to someone, you know, just put on a Craigslist and maybe that piece is just going to get ruined over time. That's why we're creating this marketplace so people can, you know, find, yes, other collectors who would be interested in saving these pieces.
It's really valuable.
Yeah.
So
the majority of the time we will purchase anything that's that we feel like is part of, can be part of our collection. And then anything else, I unfortunately over the last few years, I've had to just turn them away and be like, get in touch with this store or maybe try selling it here. So,
right.
Yeah.
I wonder if on your Instagram, the Instagram is at Mid-Century Mobler, for all of you listening. I wonder if there were pieces or images where people could just go and bid directly with them.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely, that is definitely a possibility we can explore as a sort of a temporary measure, because this this thing we're building is going to take a little while. It's, but yeah. It is a little bit of a tragedy when you're like, well, I don't know what you're going to do with those teak wine racks. Like, I can't take them on right now.
Right.
You know, right. So hopefully we can help people with that in the future with this marketplace that we're building out.
Very exciting. Well, thank you so much, Julian, for being on the show. And I'm going to go check out those pieces. I know you all are too. And cheers to mid-century modernism. This is so fun. And thank you for providing this resource for people.
Well, thanks so much for having us on. This has been great.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you had as much fun learning about the world of mid-century modernism as I did. You can also catch the show on my YouTube channel, where we walk through some of the most stylish mid-century modern homes in California. Just search for Mid-Century Modernism with Monique and hit subscribe. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a comment to let me know what you think. Your feedback helps me make the show even better. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on Mid-Century Modernism with Monique.